Blog Talk.
So anyway,
from deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. A big hello to everyone around the world, our listeners we have in Ireland, England, New Zealand, Australia, and all across North America. And we are having record downloads, so we definitely appreciate you listening to our show. And tell your friends, because there's lots of great programs that we've done in the past, and we've got a dandy tonight. Joining us a little bit later on in the program, from Crescendo Records, he's been responsible for many of the sci-fi music beds that you've heard behind great movies like Godzilla, the Star Trek stuff, and the Forbidden Planet, goes on and on. Neil Norman will be with us, and we're going to also talk about the brand new The Seeds release from our band that I think someone called them one of the greatest garage bands ever, so they're going to be with us, or he's going to be with us in just a little bit. As always, our studio producer, and who right now is probably turned into a puddle because she's a unbelievable Star Trek fan, Melissa Hovey. Wayne Larson, our technical engineer. Scott Carney takes care of our music. And from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always punctual, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson. Are you ready for the longest day of the year tomorrow?
Tomorrow's that day?
Tonight at 1:04 a.m., the summer solstice starts, so summer begins tonight in about 3 hours.
Feels like summer right now.
It does.
It's been, well, I didn't tell you this, Dr. Day, but we finally got our garden in, and the rabbits have not eaten all the peas yet, so.
Well, with six tigers out there, I'm not sure if the rabbits want to get too close.
Well, you'd be surprised. The little bunnies are we'll see. I'm not going to brag about it because if I talk about it, we'll look tomorrow and all of the peas that have grown will be eaten to the ground. So, you know, we don't want that to happen. The following portion of Wild World is brought to you by We Want You Cottages in Chautauqua Lake. In Maysville, New York, the proprietors, Peter and Kathy Weimer, what a great place. We had the opportunity to stay there about 6 weeks ago. Cabins and fishing Chautauqua Lake. It's like an ocean. It's huge. In western New York, muskie, walleye, perch, pike. It's all there. What a great spot. Go to their website. Check it out. We Want You, WEWANCHU.com. And guys, tell me you were listening to Larry Batson's Wild World. They're one of the underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for June 20th. All right, I'm going to give you two reasons not to feed a bear. Let's head off to Alaska. The State Department of Fish and Game said that the black bear that mauled a man at a campground north of Anchorage won't likely threaten other people. And the reason? Well, the bear attack happened because the man fed it beef from a church barbecue.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Now, not funny, but...
He was probably attacked because the bear wanted some potato salad, too. Now, here's the other reason why you don't feed bears. He may be charged with illegally feeding wildlife.
Well, he should be. Absolutely. That's dangerous.
Absolutely.
That's why they build those containers in Yellowstone and Glacier that are bear-proof because, you know, bears are so smart. Once they've been fed once, they'll be back.
That's right.
And, you know, I've always said, Dr. Day, a bear is the only animal that I've ever seen eating and defecating at the same time. So, you know.
And Well, you have two very large bears right outside your door. So
yeah, I'm looking at them right now. I should know that.
All right, tap your heels together three times. We're heading off to Kansas. Stafford, Kansas. Now, conservationists are raising concerns about a proposal to expand hunting at the National Wildlife Refuge in south central Kansas because it could threaten the whooping cranes that migrate through there every year. But the wildlife refuge managers contend that the federally endangered birds would still be protected. Now, currently, the refuge is closed because the whooping cranes are there on their annual migration.
Hunting in a refuge, that just doesn't sound right.
Yes, and no, that doesn't make any sense. First off, if you have animals that are migrating, they're only there for a few days. And I'm sure gunshots would probably scare them off when they're not ready to leave.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, well, we're counting hills in Alpena, Michigan. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service crews will use a chemical to drive sea lamprey larvae to the surface of Long Lake Creek, where they'll be collected, measured, and counted.
Wow.
Yeah, chemicals.
That's always been a problem, you know, with because they just latch onto a fish, don't let go, and they just basically they suck it to death, you know. That's what they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's just not a good way to go.
No.
All right, now you're going to enjoy this next story. Have you ever had to call the police because your monkey got out?
No, I have not.
All right, Conway, Arkansas. A 30-pound pet monkey burst out of his steel cage at a veterinary clinic and played with a large orange house cat before it was coaxed back by a police officer. Now, an alarm was triggered Tuesday when Joey, a macaque, broke out of the Chestnut Animal Clinic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we had Michael Biggs on the program. This has been a long, long time ago. And when he was a sheriff, there was that lady who had a chimpanzee in her basement and attacked her one day and nearly crippled her. And he went down and he made friends with this chimpanzee. He kept it for many, many years, but he didn't have to arrest it, though he did give it a nice ride in his sheriff car on the way home.
Now, is that the same chimpanzee that used to ride the riding lawnmower down to the local store?
Yeah, he would ride the riding lawnmower. He would mow his grass. He said the only thing he had to do was mow the perimeter of his yard, and a chimp would mow the rest, and he really did a better job than he did. So that's.
All right, Melissa and Wayne, this sounds like a fun survey. Augusta, Maine. Volunteer fishers are being sought to survey remote ponds and lakes around the state in search of brook trout. Yeah, now wouldn't that be a great job to have?
To go fishing and get paid?
To go fishing, yeah.
Yeah, we used to catch those brookies, we'd call them, out in Colorado.
Yeah.
Quite beautiful little fish and a lot of fun to catch.
And very tasty, too.
And they do taste. Very good.
All right, well, it's not hard to find a parking place if you're a turtle. Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Bob and Liz Bush, the owners of Buckley's Mountainside Canoes, have roped off a parking space where a large female snapping turtle has laid clutches of eggs in the dirt.
Well, God love them. That's fantastic.
I know. Now we just got to watch here in a couple of months when those little guys try to make their way back to the river.
Yeah, that's very cool. You know, they're about the size of a 50-cent piece when they're born. They're not.
Yeah, they are quite cute.
Yeah, they are.
And they still have a pretty nasty personality like their parents.
Well, I have one right now, Dr. Day. I forgot to tell you about that I have been raising. He's about the size. He's a little bit bigger than a half dollar. And he's got quite a nice personality, believe it or not.
Well, you'll have to stop by and we'll get some mealworms for him.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
All right. Now, all I'm going to say about this story, if you're found guilty of poaching wild turkeys in Water Valley, Mississippi, just get ready to serve 10 days in the county jail.
All right. I'm going to hunting turkeys.
I'm going to sing you into our next song.
You're going to sing?
Clover bird is on the wing, and you may not know why. Delaware, four piping plover chicks have hatched from this year's only nest at Gordon's Pond in Cape Henlopen State Park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, three pairs of the endangered shorebirds have set up foraging territories along the bayside with their chicks that hatch this month.
Hmm.
One nest, four chicks. Not
that's
a good fish for the plovers.
Yeah, that's interesting. They're pretty little birds.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
All right, local news. Lafayette, Indiana. A deer left a trail of damage behind as it invaded a food festival in Lafayette.
Oh, God.
Yes, a panicked deer leaped into the old train depot where the Taste of Tippecanoe was being held Saturday.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, then the deer jumped back out, breaking two windows. Now the animal ran up and down the platform, knocking over chairs and sending people scurrying in all directions.
Hmm.
Eventually, the deer leaped over the railing onto the railroad tracks. And I think I know why the deer left the food court.
Oh, why is that?
He didn't have any dough.
You know, you should be ashamed.
I should let you know beforehand.
You should go sit in the corner right now.
All right, we've got a full moon coming up this weekend. And, Melissa, what do we always warn our listeners?
Watch out for the animals.
Yeah.
There are more animal attacks during the full moon than any other time of the month.
That explains everything.
Yep. All right, are you ready for the Wild World Facts of the Day?
Yes, I am. Hold on.
All right,
I'm
well, you know
down.
The expression, dead on your feet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, elephants have been known to remain standing after they die.
Really?
Really.
That's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad.
But impressive at the same.
Interesting, yes.
Yeah, very interesting.
All right. Armadillos, possums, and sloths spend about 80% of their lives sleeping.
And Dr. Day.
That's right. That's a good job if you can get it. Now, of all the known forms of animal life ever to inhabit the Earth, only about 10% still exist today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
well, that's
nice.
The Wild World News for June 20th.
Well, once again, a fine job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, also our wildlife education programs. And also a new fundraiser from SRI Records. They have compiled a wonderful download with a variety of artists, including Mitch Ryder, Elvis Presley, Little Richard, the Archies, Roy Orbison, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, Hank Williams, Freddie Fender, oh my gosh, and Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, and many, many more. And for a donation to Wildlife Educational Services and our work that we do with wildlife, you can get that download and enjoy some really, really fantastic music. These are the things that make it possible for Larry Baston's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
You're pushing too hard, you're pushing on me. You're pushing too hard, what you want me to be. You're pushing too hard about the things you're saying. You're pushing too hard every night and day. You're pushing too hard, pushing too hard on me.
Guest tonight, all the way from California, in charge of Crescendo Records, an exciting new triple CD of the band The Seeds. Our guest, what a pleasure, and a sci-fi guy too, Neil Norman. Good evening, Neil.
Hi, how are you doing? How nice to speak with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for giving us your little bit of your Thursday evening. I have to tell you right off the bat, I was so impressed. I received this box, folks, from Mr. Norman of quite a few CDs of some of the things that he's worked on and his company produces and distributes. Man, you know, and you're a sci-fi guy, and you're now involved in the Seeds Project, which we want to talk about first. Tell us a little bit about the Seeds for the people that may not know.
Well, the Seeds were a very famous rock group from the mid-60s, led by a very charismatic frontman named Sky Saxon, and my father signed them to a record deal to our record label, which is called GNP Crescendo Records. And we're probably the oldest independent label in the world now. We're coming into our 60th year of continuous operation.
Wow.
So he signed the Seeds to a record deal, and it took a while, but eventually they became very famous and successful. And they had number one records in Seattle and Chicago, and they played at the Hollywood Bowl and got standing ovations. So I grew up with it when I was in junior high, and I hung out with them, and they're fantastic guys. Two of them are still with us. Two of them are gone. And I was totally steeped in their music. So now I'm making a film about them, and all of their old albums are being reissued with new tracks and unreleased music.
Well, I had a chance to listen to it. I'll tell you what, it brought back a lot of memories, because I can remember that era of bands. And didn't Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers do Pushing Too Hard and in concert or something, if my memory is correct?
Well, it's really interesting. It's always been a favorite of most guitar players and bands and stuff because, for one thing, it's easy to play. It's only two chords, even though it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce Johnston, who's in the movie, he's from the Beach Boys, he said that at sound checks, the Beach Boys would do Pushing Too Hard for fun when they were doing a sound check with no audience.
Wow.
Because they never got to play music like that.
Yeah, Brian Wilson was, he.
Yeah, exactly. They would do these beautiful ballads and exciting surf music. I love the Beach Boys. The first record I ever bought was Surfing USA. But they loved the Seeds, and they did a few concerts together, believe it or not, in the 60s.
So what were the guys like? Here you were, a young man, and you probably didn't, at that time, appreciate the moment that here you are with these rock and roll legends, per se.
Well, I did, because I grew up in show business. My father had nightclubs, the Crescendo and the Interlude, and Johnny Mathis and Stan Kenton and Mort Saul and Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie.
Mm-hmm.
All those people worked for him in his nightclubs and also concerts. He was a well-known impresario. He's still with us. He's 91 now.
Wow.
And he's doing well. And he was also famous on the radio. So I was just always steeped in entertainment and music and film and everything. And that's why I became a producer and an artist in my own right. And my father was sort of grooming me to understand all facets of show business so I could turn it into a career. And as you know, it can be really a lot of fun, or it can be very difficult.
It's a job. When we were talking to Al Jardine, you know, and then we're talking about as being a Beach Boy, it's a hard job.
Exactly. It has tremendous highs and tremendous lows. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't last very long, even if you're successful. Like the Seeds were very, very successful in 66, 67, 68, 69, and then it fell off, and then they kind of slept for a while. And then when punk came in, people considered them the godfathers of punk. So they've held on for a niche following for all these decades. And people still love them, and they still sell some records.
I'll bet. I assume the Ramones would be one of those bands that love the Seeds.
Exactly. They cut one of their songs. I think they did. They do Can't Seem to Make You Mine?
It seems like.
Yeah, I think they did Can't Seem to Make You Mine.
Wow.
Very similar, as a lot of people call it, garage rock. You know,
yeah.
That's not my favorite term, but I understand it. It's basic music of kids playing in the garage, you know.
Sure.
With loud electric guitars, etc.
Yeah. So
I grew up with that, and of course I had a garage band, and my first garage band when I was 13 was called A Web of Sound, which is the name of one of the Seeds albums. And the first gig I ever did, believe it or not, was at Jennifer Jones's house, the movie star.
Really?
Yeah, because her daughter went to school with me, so I knew her. So she says, oh, we're having a Halloween party. Could your band play? And I said, of course. And we each got 10 bucks apiece. We were so excited.
Sweet.
That's some money back then.
Oh, yeah. No, a kid could go for a month on that. in those days, in the 60s, well, you know. So that was fun. And Peter Ustinov walked by while I was playing, and there was all kinds of movie stars hanging out. And they were digging our band. We were pretty good. The lead singer of our band was Voyle Gilmore's son, who Voyle Gilmore produced Frank Sinatra's biggest records on Capitol.
Oh, my Lord.
So I've just been around all this show business fun and tragedy my whole life. So it's very interesting. I'm writing a book, too, with my father.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. It's going to take a while to finish, but we've already started it.
Well, gosh, that'll be a treat when that comes out, because, I mean, between your father and yourself.
Yeah. By the way, my father's name is Gene Norman, G-E-N-E, Gene Norman.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to check on Wikipedia or anything.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, so I was just so involved, and then through the years I've thought about it, and I went to UCLA Film School also. So I decided, well, I've had a lot of music career, now I want to start making films. And the first one I made was about Rusty Warren, the comedian. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm working on one about the Seeds. And since I grew up with them and I knew them and we did business with them, I'm somewhat of an expert. And my co-producer is Alec Palau, and he does a lot of fantastic reissues for GNP Crescendo and Ace Records in England. So we're working together on it, and he knows a lot of 60s rock legends, and he's interviewed quite a few himself.
Our guest tonight, Neil Norman. This movie, when's it going to start production? Do you know yet?
Oh, we're almost finished with it.
You're almost.
It's a documentary.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, it's a documentary, and it's called The Seeds, Pushing Too Hard. That's the name of the movie. And it features Bruce Johnson from the Beach Boys and John Eccles from the band Love and all the original Seeds and people that knew Sky Saxon and myself and my father and Humble Harve, the famous disc jockey.
Yeah.
And a lot of interesting people. And we just found out that Iggy Pop, we're going to film him this month. He's going to be in it too.
My Lord. Now there's
so everyone loves the Seeds, so everyone has been very enthusiastic and thrilled to participate. So that's made it easy for me.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the Seeds are now one of they're a cult favorite, we'll say.
That's a good way of describing it. And my father taught me. He said, "Flowers die, love may fade, but music lives forever."
It absolutely does, and they've aged so well, you know. And I listen to some of the music that's out now, and I'm thinking, are we still going to be hearing that 20 years from now, 30 years from now?
I agree.
And I'm not thinking we are, you know.
They really created some classics, and I was lucky to be around when a lot of it was happening. And one of their songs, I was in the studio, and the bass drum was slipping on the Rick Andridge's drum set, so I was sitting there holding the bass drum while they were recording. So I was right in the middle of all the music while they were recording, and that was a great song called "The Wind Blows Your Hair." And some of their other hits, as you know, are "Mr. Farmer," "A Thousand Shadows," "Pushing Too Hard," "Can't Seem to Make You Mine," "Trip Maker," "A Faded Picture." They have a huge body of work that's marvelous.
It absolutely is. In fact, I have to tell you, I have the CD in my truck, and I've been listening to it religiously every time I go somewhere, and it just brings back so many wonderful memories, and especially these groups of the 60s. I assume they played the Fillmore.
Yeah, they played the Fillmore. They played Alaska, all 48 states. They went to number one in Hawaii. Girls were ripping their clothes off in Honolulu when they played. And as I said, they played at the Hollywood Bowl with the Supremes and Johnny Rivers. And,
my gosh.
They toured extensively with Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Oh,
and,
Lord.
Of course, their hottest place was in Hollywood, where they played at the Hullabaloo and the Whiskey-A-Go-Go and the Sea Witch and all kinds of interesting places. And I was lucky enough to see them. I didn't have a driver's license, but I was lucky enough to see them.
You've lived,
you know,
a very blessed
life. My dad would always
life.
Let me go to concerts. And in those days, the nightclubs always served food, so people under 21 could get in.
Yeah. Well, you've lived a very blessed life, and I've said this over and over. I'm so thankful for when I grew up, and the wonderful music that we was the background of our lives. Groups like mm-hmm. the Seeds, and we were talking earlier before we went on, Vanilla Fudge, of course the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and all that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love them all, and I became a studio musician and a guitar player and synthesizer player, and I got to play on some of the last records by the Monkees when I was very young. And I also played with a band called Bo Donaldson and the Haywoods.
Yeah.
That had one hit called Billy Don't Be a Hero.
I remember
and I
that.
Played with Arthur Lyman, the Polynesian exotica virtuoso. And
mm-hmm.
Lucky, and I, of course, I fronted my own band. I played at the Star Trek The Experience grand opening, and I played there many times in Las Vegas.
Wow.
I even played in Rio de Janeiro playing Star Trek music, and also Sao Paulo. In Sao Paulo, a bunch of my fans showed up to the nightclub. You know, it's like mm-hmm. a rock and roll club, but we're playing all Star Trek music, and most of the audience had Star Trek outfits on. It was really cool.
I'll bet it
so
was.
So I poked my nose outside to see, and there was a line waiting to get in, and they all had Star Trek uniforms. It was really fun.
That's fantastic.
All the way in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Man, that's just absolutely amazing. Well, your catalog, your record company's catalog is absolutely impressive. And we're going to we're going to talk about the sci-fi stuff in the second half of the show, but
yep.
The Seeds.
Well, if anyone wants to check it out, our website is gnpcrescendo.com or crescendorecords.com, because we have a cool website, and it also has a lot of photographs of my father and myself and a lot of the music artists. So I think people will enjoy that, crescendorecords.com.
Oh, well, absolutely. I encourage everyone. And because I was looking through this catalog, and I remember that, the Ventures and all the surf music, and it's just absolutely incredible. Our guest tonight, Neil Norman. Neil, we're going to take a short break, so if you need to refresh your beverage or whatever, we're going to be right back. You're listening
Dynamite.
To Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We're going to be back in just a few moments with Neil Norman from GMP Crescendo Records in California. And what a great guest. We're going to talk some sci-fi in the second half of the show. We want to thank McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, for being an underwriter. Folks, if you've never had the chance, the opportunity to see the Rockies, man, that's the place to go. It's right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. From their cabins, you may have bighorn sheep, black bear, bobcat, mountain lion, right there in your backyard, practically. It's absolutely extraordinary. Go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com, and plan that next vacation out west, because you will not regret it. It's an absolutely fantastic place. We thank them for being an underwriter, and they make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, Neil Norman, a little collage of some of the fantastic music that his label puts out, I guess we should say. Gosh, Neil, I don't think an hour's going to be long enough.
Oh, well, thank you. We're very proud of all the body of work that we've created, you know, anything from steel drum music to Zydeco to sci-fi to jazz to comedy, you name it, anything that's entertaining, we love it.
Well, I'll tell you what, the music I just listened to, that gave me cold chills. And in fact, we need to bring into the conversation, because we were talking Star Trek a little bit earlier. Melissa Hovey, our studio producer, is probably one of the ultimate Star Trek fans, and I know she wanted to hear me. First of all, she called me 2 days ago and said, I realize who our guest is, and he's worked on Star Trek. Do you think he's ever met Leonard Nimoy? And I asked you before the show, and he said yes several times. So we need a good Leonard Nimoy.
Well, I've met almost the entire cast of almost all the shows, because I've played a lot at Star Trek conventions,
mm-hmm.
all the way back from classic series all the way through Voyager and beyond. And, you know, I've hung out with Scott Bakula and William Shatner, and Tim Russ sang with my band many times in Las Vegas and even in New York. And a lot of times when we were at conventions, the stars would want to sing various types of songs, whether they be rock or stage type repertoire, and we would back them up. So that was really fun.
I bet.
Most actors are good singers, you know, so it's very entertaining, and the fans go crazy. Because seeing them perform like that is really fun. Or sometimes they might do poetry or a reading or good old rock and roll. You know, like the cast of Xena, Warrior Princess, they were heavy rockers. I mean, some of the guys on that show had voices like Tom Jones. It was amazing. And we were just rock out.
Well, are you your PR?
By the way, the name of my band is called Neil Norman and His Cosmic Orchestra, and I've been doing that since 1977.
Well, I'm holding one of
the albums that I'm most famous for, maybe, are called Greatest Science Fiction Hits.
Which include many of the ones. Well, one that struck me as I was looking through the catalog was the film Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, that was my favorite as a kid. That was made in 1956, as you know, and that has electronic music by Louis and B.B. Baron. And I actually released the original of that. And that particular score I thought was too sacred and too unique to try and re-perform it, so I only released it. But I got to meet Louis and B.B. Baron. And my father was neighbors with Leslie Nielsen, the Commander Adams from Forbidden Planet. And I've met Robbie the robot. He's really cool. And just very lucky to be involved in all this because it really triggers your imagination. As Einstein said, knowledge is important, but imagination is everything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those are great films. Of course, I tell youngsters now, when we were growing up, we'd had a show on. It was on like a Friday night at 11:30 after the news that would play a lot of these films on one of the four channels that we had.
What was it called?
It was called Sammy Terry's Nightmare Theater.
I think I've heard of that. Sometimes I would be guests on shows like that, like the Big Chuck and Little John show. Have you ever heard of that?
That's
or Elvira.
Elvira.
Yeah, exactly.
Elvira.
Yeah, she's really a great comedian, and she's wonderful to work with. She used some of my music on some of her records. She made Halloween records, and she used some of the music. She's a great performer. Cute, too.
Yeah, oh, she is, yeah. So tell us a great Leonard Nimoy story for our studio producer, Melissa Hovey.
Sure. Well, one time I had a booth at a Star Trek convention. Mm-hmm. And in those days, it wasn't very organized. They just had the stars come, and they didn't have handlers or green rooms or anything. They'd just show up in a banquet room of a hotel with about 1,000 kids or more, maybe. And I had my booth in the dealer's room, so Leonard Nimoy spoke for a while, for like 40 minutes, and then he came and signed autographs, and he didn't realize it was going to be such a torrential outpouring of interest. So there was like hundreds of people waiting for his autograph, and he was just scribbling them as fast as he could. He would just go zoo, 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 zim, zam, zoom, zim, zam, zoom, zim, zam, zoom. And he must have signed 1,000 autographs in about 20 minutes. And then he said, God, I'm out of here. I mean, he was enjoying it, but it was a little bit too crazy. I mean, it was Vulcan mania.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of fun. And I was standing right next to him when that was going on, so that was funny. And later on, I met him at the 20th anniversary of Star Trek, which is now a long time ago, and my father was there, and Gene Roddenberry was a big fan of my father because he used to listen to him on the radio. Mm-hmm. So Gene Roddenberry and my dad started talking for a long time, like 20 minutes, and there's the most famous people in Hollywood were there, and someone came up and say, Mr. Roddenberry, CBS wants to interview you about the 20th anniversary of Star Trek. And he says, no, have him wait. I'm talking to Gene Norman. I couldn't believe that. So it's really interesting when you're a fan of somebody when you're a kid, you know, you hold them in very high regard, obviously.
I'll bet. Did you find that the stars of Star Trek couldn't really put a handle on why it was so popular and why it the longevity of it?
No, I think they get it. I mean, as you know, there's been a lot written about it. You know, it's the optimistic future of mankind. And every day now, I look at scientific discoveries and technology, and it's all coming from Star Trek, you know. Remember the first cell phones that would open up like communicators?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all designed around concepts that a lot of sci-fi people first thought of, you know, whether
wow.
it's robotics or Isaac Asimov or Gene Roddenberry or any of those important visionaries. And I like being a visionary in music, so I think, well, we should make a movie about this. And it's all triggered by that. You know, imagination is so important.
Did you have a favorite science fiction series? Or?
Well, my favorite movie is Forbidden Planet or Alien.
Mm-hmm.
In movies and TV series, of course, I love Star Trek and The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone. And I like Xena, Warrior Princess. I love them all.
Yeah.
I can't get enough. I've kind of seen almost every science fiction movie ever made because ever since I was 5 years old, I wanted to see every single one I could.
I can remember as a child in the 60s of the original Outer Limits programs. And
correct.
They would be so well, as a youngster, they're so scary, I would have to look away from the television. I mean, of course, now.
Well, I released the music from that series by Dominic Frontieri, and he's a brilliant composer. And we even did a book called The Outer Limits Companion, which is sold out. We're thinking about doing our next printing. It's going for $100 a piece on eBay because it's so rare now. But we sold thousands of them, so that was fun. And that's definitely one of my favorites. And as you know, a few people from Outer Limits went on to Star Trek, like Robert Jessman and a couple of the effects people. So some of the same people worked on both, believe it or not.
Wow. So, Melissa, do you have something you would like to ask Mr. Norman?
Which was your favorite Star Trek character?
I'd say Vina, the green Orion slave girl.
Really?
Yep, I think she's cool. I mean, she was only in a couple episodes, and that was played by Susan Oliver, who was a famous TV actress of the time, and my dad actually was good close friends with her, and she was a very accomplished pilot. She even broke a couple of airspeed records in her plane, and she was lovely. But I love all the characters. I love Tuvok, played by Tim Russ, who's a friend of mine, and of course Mr. Spock, and I love them all. It all fits together like a puzzle.
Well, let me ask you this question. I'm sorry, Larry.
But
like with Leonard Nimoy, he doesn't really give a whole lot of interviews. Is he actually?
Well, he's a little reclusive. He does one occasionally, but he doesn't seek out publicity. You're right.
Yeah.
I think at times some of the stars love to get up on stage and yak, or some of them they might have something to promote, so they'll come out of the woodwork, and some are very reclusive like him. But sometimes he'll get bored with dumb questions, you know.
Yeah.
Like it says, oh, asking him what's your favorite kind of hamburger. You know, they vary in their interest as far as getting out with the fans. All of them are different. Some you can't get them off the stage in front of the fans. They have to drag them off practically. And some don't want to show up at all. They're like Patrick Stewart is very reclusive.
Yeah.
And I think it has to do with they're shy or else they don't want to say the wrong thing, or it might depend on the money. Sometimes some of them make a lot of money making appearances.
Right. Well, you know, I've noticed that when I watch the older ones, the older Star Trek episodes, and I've always kind of, because if you watch Leonard Nimoy play Spock, it seems almost like the character comes second nature to him. So I've always kind of wondered how close he is in personality in real life. Spock.
Well, as you know, he wrote a book called I Am Not Spock, so I think he toys with that, because a lot of TV stars and movie stars, fans think they know them just from the way they are on the screen, and it could be close, and it might not be. So I'd say he has some elements, of course, but I think he's more outgoing than that. I've seen him when he's really relaxed around, you know, when he's away from the fans backstage or something. He's very relaxed and normal, you know. Very intelligent, very talented, obviously.
What's that old saying, don't meet your favorite star, you'll be disappointed?
Well, usually you're not disappointed, but it may not be the role. They're playing a role, you know. So it may not be what you expect, so you might be disappointed. Like I met Sean Connery once, and of course, if you're a kid, you want him to be like James Bond.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you know.
Sure.
Just relaxed and almost bored by it all, you know. So everyone's different.
Well,
it's according to their personality. Some people are very outgoing, some are not.
Did you have a favorite of the folks that you met in the sci-fi industry?
Well, there's so many brilliant, nice, talented people, and I'm a fan too, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I love them all, again. So, you know, Tim Russ sings with my band. He's a close friend. We go out to dinner occasionally. I was just at his birthday party recently. He plays Tuvok on Voyager. And Seven of Nine, she's really nice. She sung with my band. on our website, gnpcrescendo.com, you'll see pictures of the Voyager cast singing with my band, which is really fun. And Robert Picardo, he's a riot. He's a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays the Doctor on Voyager. And Scott Bakula from Quantum Leap, he's a fantastic guy, really friendly. He's more bashful. You know, he loves to perform. He works all the time, but he doesn't show up to events very often. Occasionally, but very, very rarely. So I don't know why. He's just thinking about the work. He doesn't want to do publicity.
Sure.
Some people are bashful or shy, or they don't want to do it, or else they want to hang out with their kids on the weekend. You know, could
well,
be a
there
million
was a
reasons.
Member.
Everyone's different.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there was a member of your band. It was quite a friend of our show, David Carr.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh, he's a fantastic guy. Unfortunately, we lost him. He was in the Fortunes, and I met him when I produced The Ventures, and he was playing keyboards, and I go, wow, what a great keyboard player. And they would record with him, but they weren't using him for live gigs. So I said,
mm-hmm.
You're going to come and do live gigs with me. And he was dynamite. We were the best of friends. And we toured Europe twice and played in Roswell, New Mexico, and all up and down the California coast and Las Vegas and stuff. He was fantastic, and he was very underrated. He could play anything.
Oh, what a great spirit he had, too. What a nice man.
Yeah, and as you know, he played on my last two greatest science fiction hits albums, and he was brilliant.
Just a really, really good friend of the program, and we really miss him. That was just so unfortunate.
Yeah,
and, of
exactly.
course, one of my favorites, Godzilla.
Godzilla, that was the first theme that I ever triggered me when I was a little boy. So I loved that song, and I was always humming it when I saw Godzilla on black and white TV in the 50s when I was a little boy. And
oh,
I'm
yeah.
very proud of the fact that I released the first record of Godzilla with my recording, and then later on I released all the music from all the Godzilla movies on a series of CDs, The Best of Godzilla, 1954 to 1998 or something like that. I'm not looking at it right now, but it has hours of repertoire, the best music from the Godzilla films from Toho. And Toho
mm-hmm.
is like Paramount in Japan, and they do all the Godzilla stuff. And they were touched by it, and it sold a lot of albums and CDs, so I'm very proud
I'll
of
bet.
That. And we played at the Godzilla convention, too, and Godzilla even showed up.
Really? Wow.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess they're doing a new Godzilla film?
I haven't kept track. I've been so focused on the Seeds movie, I haven't been keeping track. But the albums are still doing well. We just sold out of another printing, and we're going to press more. So I'm excited about that. And the albums, they all have a lot of rare photographs and liner notes and things like that. So that was a big deal for me. As you said, Godzilla or James Bond or Captain Kirk, they're all heroes of mine as a youngster. So to actually get to work with them later in life is really a treat. I'm very lucky.
We'll want to give out your website once more.
Thank you. The website is gnpcrescendo.com or crescendorecords.com, crescendorecords.com, and there's a lot of photographs and albums to check out, and 45s and vinyl and cassettes and 8-tracks, you name it.
Oh, the vinyl is so impressive. I was so hypnotized for a moment, I have to tell you, Neil, when I pulled out the 45s. Now, of course, the young people, a 45, what in the hell is that?
Mm-hmm.
And you had on a 45, Petulia Clark, Downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting. She was originally on Warner Brothers Records, but the real
mm-hmm.
truth is she was owned by a label in France called Vogue, and they were friends with my dad. So Warner Brothers had a tremendous success with it, but then they lost interest in it because they were doing rock in the 70s. So
mm-hmm.
Vogue gave the Petula Clark repertoire to my father, Gene Norman, and Crescendo Records. So we had her greatest hits for like 25 years. And
wow.
I'm very proud of that. And that was fun. She had 4 number one records. It was a great album. And I remember seeing her getting really big royalty checks from us. So that's always fun to send someone a big check. Because, you know, you can make a lot of money in this business, but it's very difficult. And for every one that makes $1 million, there's 1,000 that don't make anything. So it's like gambling, you know.
Yeah.
So any success in show business, you have to respect.
Oh, absolutely. And I was looking at one of my favorite bands, which I'm sure many of our listeners have never heard of, Savoy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Always loved
that. Yeah, Savoy Brown Blues Band, they came out in the late 60s and early 70s, and they have a virtuoso guitar player named Kim Simmons, who's also a great writer. And their biggest hit record was called Tell Mama. And I got them later in their career because they were considered has-beens by some people, and no one wanted to give them a record deal. And I said, no, they're great, I'll do it. So I produced 3 great albums with them, Make Me Sweat, Kings of Boogie, and Live and Kickin'. And those are very good albums. I'm very proud of those. And I'm a guitar player, too, so I really enjoy producing guitar players, especially when they're hot, like Kim Simmons. And I've produced a few guitar players like Robin Trower and The Ventures and Kim Simmons and Gary Richrath from REO Speedwagon.
Oh, yeah. That's a great guitar player, I'll tell you. He is incredible. So Stan
yeah.
Brown.
And we have a lot of other guitar players like Buddy Merrill, who was on the Lawrence Welk TV show, and Billy Strange, who was in the Wrecking Crew. We even have one album called Dylan Jazz, and it has Glenn Campbell playing jazz renditions of Bob Dylan songs, and it's very good.
Wow. And, of course, your album, Facing Destiny, Neil Norman and Bobby Sexton.
Sure. Well, Bobby Sexton is from Iowa, and I met him in Hollywood, and we played together for several years, and we made that album, and that's kind of like Asia progressive rock with heavy guitar. And we had a lot of fun touring around on that, and we played in New York, Detroit, Mississippi, Texas, Iowa, you know, all over. So that was fun. And so I love exploring different musical territories, whether it be soundtracks or rock or blues, anything.
And one of my favorite bands, the Chamber Brothers, and your wonderful CD, Love, Peace, and Happiness, live at the Fillmore East.
Yeah, that's a great album. And
oh.
The first time they ever worked on a record, my dad hired them way before they became famous on Columbia Records. My dad produced an act called Joe and Eddie, which were a folk gospel duo, and their biggest hit was called There's a Meetin' Here Tonight. And the Chambers Brothers became pals with them, and they brought them in, and they sang backup on one of Joe and Eddie's songs, which is an excellent song. And they were great singers, and they had the soul, obviously.
Did you have an opportunity to be in the recording session with them?
No, not that time, but I did see them live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, my.
That was fun.
I'll bet.
And that was great. And that was when they were really hitting it big, so that was neat.
Yeah, Time Will Come Today. That was a hit, I believe.
Yeah, that was one of their biggest hits. And, of course, Love, Peace, and Happiness was a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great. Good blending of gospel, soulful vocals, and cool guitar rock. Very good.
I want everyone to know about this wonderful catalog because as we look at the MTV years, I see the album by A Flock of Seagulls.
Mm-hmm.
Another band.
We released that. They had produced that on their own, and they said, would you like to release this? And we said, sure. And then Bobby Sexton and I toured with them for a while. We were the opening act, and Flock of Seagulls were headliners. And it was really neat because every place we played was sold out because they were hot. And they're a great band, too. Mike Score is the vocalist.
Right.
And he's the one that always has very unusual hair because he used to be a hairdresser.
Yeah. Oh, he did.
He's the one that had like a triangle haircut, you know, kind of thing.
Well, they were the stars of MTV when it first started. I mean, how many times?
Oh, absolutely.
Can't remember the name of the song that was so big.
It was called Iran.
Iran.
Because Iran so far away.
Mm-hmm.
They had it 2 or 3 hits, so they were good. It's fun to watch an audience when someone kicks into a song that they really know to recognize it and go crazy.
Isn't that about the most breathtaking moment in any concert when the first few bars and then the song or the audience, excuse me, just explodes? I mean,
I love that. Yeah, of course.
Oh,
and that's why it's kind of fun to go out there and do that, when they recognize your work. Because a lot of times you're just in a studio by yourself or with a couple people, and you don't realize the effect that it's having on the world. So when you go out there and you see people really recognize it, or they say, gee, I really enjoyed that Godzilla album, or I really enjoyed that Chambers Brothers album, or wow, I dug your guitar solo on that song, or whatever, it's very touching. It's very rewarding.
It's kind of like the moment in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And if you remember the film, when George Clooney, they break into that song in front of that meeting of some sort, and they had no idea that their song had been a big hit down mm-hmm. south, and the crowd just says, oh, it's, what do they call it? The
Soggy Smokey. Bottom.
Gosh, I can't think of the name of the band.
Soggy
Bottom Boys or
something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
know.
Incredible.
Musical is a very powerful force, and especially if you go to a foreign country that's 7,000 miles away. And as you know, sometimes something will be very popular in one place and not so much in another, you know.
Yes, and audiences, as you probably have experienced, are not the same. I mean, audience from Cleveland, Ohio, and Tokyo, Japan would be entirely different.
Sure. We had a band called the Mom and Dads, and they were three guys in their 60s and one lady in her 70s, and they got the number one record in Australia for us, and they played very simple, basic music with accordion, sax, drums,
mm-hmm.
and they went to number one in Australia. They knocked American Pie off the charts, and, you know, if you listen to it, you'd be puzzled, but it's very basic, and it's my grandmother's music, and her generation just loved it. It's really interesting. So that's a very wide range from Forbidden Planet to that.
Well,
but my father, he wanted to build a label that does anything, you know, like Columbia Records. So
sure.
We have a small version of that, and it's modest, but we're very proud of it, and we have a lot of wonderful, great records.
Well, I wouldn't consider it modest at all, because it's just so impressive. And as we've been chatting tonight, I've been just leaping through this catalog and just going, I'd like to hear that, I'd like to hear that, that, that.
Well, I have to send you more packages.
Oh, please.
Also, if anyone in your audience would like to have a sample CD
mm-hmm.
mailed to them, they can go to our website, gmpcrescendo.com, and I'll be happy to send them a free CD of my choice.
God, love
to
you.
Give them some samples so they can introduce themselves to some of the repertoire.
That's so kind of you.
We have little sampler CDs that we give away and stuff like that, so I think people would enjoy that.
Oh,
so go to our website and send an email or write us a letter, GNP Crescendo Records. You can find
mm-hmm.
us on the internet. And just request that, and I'll be happy. Just have them say that they came from you, and
yeah.
I'll be happy to send it to them.
Oh, God love you. That's just incredible.
Good. So I hope we send out 80,000 CDs. That would be cool.
I hope you do, too. That would be absolutely... gosh, Dr. Day, what a wonderful guest tonight.
It was nice to walk down memory lane with Neil.
Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you. Next time I want to talk about wildlife...
Yeah, because before the show we were talking about in your backyard, do you have...
Yeah, I've got raccoons and foxes and deer and bobcats even, and I'm right in the middle of Hollywood. I can see the Hollywood sign right now. So
wow.
I have a little oasis in the middle of the Hollywood Hill, so I love wildlife,
cool.
and I'm involved in that too. But we'll talk about that next time.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely are going to have a next time. If you'll be so kind to spend some time with us, because it's been an absolutely spectacular hour. I know Melissa Hubby's probably in a coma right now.
She's in hypersleep. That's the proper term for it. Cryogenic stasis.
I see. Well.
You know, I'm going to be hearing the pheromone from Forbidden Planet the rest of the night.
I love theremins. I play the theremin too. And there's a wonderful documentary that you've probably seen, Theremin, Wonderful Odyssey or something like that. And I think it won the Oscar for Best Documentary. It's a brilliant documentary. Any one of your viewers should check it out.
Well,
I'm
sure they will.
I should say.
Yeah.
But we're
well,
in their mind's eye, so they are viewers too.
Neil, what a pleasure it was to have you on tonight. Gosh, a wonderful
okay,
guest.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And
I hope
hello to
time.
Everyone in their audience. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. We enjoyed so much having you and sharing with us. Like Dr. Day said, a trip down memory lane. It's been absolutely
yeah.
incredible.
Absolutely. You guys live long and prosper.
Well, thank you very, very much. Our guest next week, everybody, Shelley Leibowitz will be with us. We're going to be talking about our download of music he's put together as a fundraiser for Wildlife Educational Services. We're going to be playing some of that music and talking to Shelley. It'll be hard to beat tonight, but we hope you tune in. Folks, you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.